In 1962, early in his career, and in fact throughout his life, Glenn Gould's stock in trade was doing things differently. A Mozart sonata that might sound, to just about everyone else, something like this. Well, to Gould, the same piece might sound like this. This is all very well when one is playing alone, but for a musical collaboration, it can become extremely complex.
The Canadian pianist Glenn Gould is to be soloist now.
So picture, if you will, Glenn Gould in his white tie and formal wear.
The Piano Concerto No. 1.
It's April of 62, and he's still a public performer, not yet at the point of abandoning concertizing completely in favor of recording. He's about to go on stage as the soloist, with Leonard Bernstein conducting, in the Brahms First Concerto. It's Carnegie Hall, full house. But he and Lenny, if you'll pardon the familiarity, have had a heck of a week rehearsing, trying to figure out how to resolve their musical differences with regard to this popular classic. Lenny, ever the gentleman, makes a speech.
You are about to hear a rather, shall we say, unorthodox performance of the Brahms D minor concerto, a performance distinctly different from any I've ever heard, or even dreamt of, for that matter, in its remarkably broad tempi and its frequent departures from Brahms' dynamic indications. I cannot say I am in total agreement with Mr. Gould's conception. And this raises the interesting question, what am I doing conducting it? I'm conducting it because Mr. Gould is so valid and serious an artist that I must take seriously anything he conceives in good faith. And his conception is interesting enough so that I feel you should hear it too.
This was guaranteed to perplex and fascinate the audience. What was the fuss about? It was about what a piece like this should sound like, with a soloist and an orchestra, and the implicit give and take between them. Gould wanted to search and meditate his way through the piece. He wanted to play down the virtuosic aspects of the concerto form, he said, and somehow unite the orchestra with the piano. He wanted to, as was typical of him, take a non-traditional approach. A traditional approach might have sounded more like this recording by Clifford Curzon and George Sell with the London Symphony Orchestra, made that same spring of 62. Its highs and lows are more extravagant. The style is more fluid, more romantic. Parts of it are much faster, more impulsive, less deliberate, perhaps. Gould, getting back to our Carnegie Hall performance, which was recorded for radio and preserved on disc, led things in a different direction. There are some beautiful sections in the Gould-Bernstein performance as their musical argument continues, moments where they seem to connect in spite of the conflict. And there are sections where it seems stretched out and not quite together. And other sections where it just feels like a Brahms concerto performance. Not so unusual, really. It's like a study in how a collaboration works, or doesn't.
The age-old question still remains, in a concerto, who is the boss, the soloist, or the conductor? The answer is, of course, sometimes one and sometimes the other, depending on the people involved. But almost always, the two manage to get together by persuasion or charm or even threats to achieve a unified performance.
Almost always. Gould asked himself the same question, who's the boss?
Part of the concerto idea is, of course, the sense of non-collaboration, the sense of willingness of the virtuoso, so-called, to show off.
And then there is the other age-old question, who is showing off more, the traditional player or the radical? Glenn Gould, it could be argued, had it both ways here. He was playing against the idea of virtuosity, but he managed, in his own way, to be the center of attention nonetheless. You don't necessarily have to be a virtuoso to stand out. The contrarian in him was indulged on this occasion, and he knew it.
So I was very grateful for the chance to do this, to exhibit it nationally, so to speak, on the radio. And I was very grateful to Mr. Bernstein for going along with this. And I thought it was only right that he should get off the hook himself.
Somehow, Glenn Gould and Leonard Bernstein and the members of the New York Philharmonic made it to the end of the Brahms Concerto No. 1 in D minor that night in 62. The critics the next morning, many of them, blasted this disunified Brahms performance. But they missed the point. There's plenty of richness in imperfection, and in hearing two imperious masters make their way through a bit of a mess. People talk a lot about harmony and collaboration, and how understanding music is the way we can all learn to cooperate. It may be true, but in this case, it is also a way people have to argue, take unorthodox positions, fight for them tooth and nail, and most of all, let them be heard, despite their differences.
I have only once before in my life had to submit to a soloist's wholly new and incompatible concept, and that was the last time I accompanied Mr. Gould.
Wish I'd been there. For WNYC, I'm Sarah Fishgold.